short ball, flapping moves back and full scarcely past square leg. So this is cricket.
Victory to the Australians by 8 wickets.
Welcome to the very first episode of the Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Schnoo. I'm your host, one of your hosts, Straubs, of many podcasting fame. And Schnoo, Vishnu, welcome to the show. Happy to have you on board for what I hope is going to be an interesting little venture.
Thanks for having me, Straubs. It's going to be exciting times ahead. Perfect time to kick off a new podcast. I'm the Schnoo Man, as my friends call me, and it's been an interesting summer of cricket so far, and it's a perfect time to get started.
You're not wrong. We sort of had plans to start this before the summer of cricket, and some scheduling conflicts and some illness on my part has set us back, but as you said, it's probably a great time to actually get started, because we're two tests into the summer. It's been a pretty bad start for Australia. We're obviously going to touch on that and touch on some big changes, but just a little bit about the idea first. Myself, Straubs at Undiluted7 on Twitter, come to this from a lot of different podcasts, host of Panthers Weekly with Straubs and Teach, host of The Straubs Show, one of the hosts on the Nothing But Blue Skies podcast. So adding this one to a burgeoning podcasting resume, as well
Empire,
as a bit of radio work on 2SSR. Oh, the Empire, yeah. I like that. A bit of a podcasting empire. Yeah. I like the idea of that. It's a shame there's no money in podcasting, because if you're going to have an empire, you may as well have an empire in something that makes money. But
Not yet, mate.
What about yourself? Not yet, that's true. I mean, some people do make money out of podcast. Joe Rogan, if I could get to Joe Rogan level, I'd be happy. Mm. That's a guy that makes money out of podcasts. But just tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all, and any sort of experience you've
sure.
got.
Sure. So my name's Vishnu Chari. I started playing cricket at the age of about 5, properly. So, been playing cricket ever since, loving watching the Australian cricket team dominate around the world. This last couple of years has been very strange emotionally. Seeing us go all around the world and lose has been really quite upsetting. But keeping things in perspective, I suppose, we had it great under Steve Waugh and Ponting and, the glory days. But it's interesting times now.
It is. It's one of those things, as you said, we're sort of similar age bracket. I'm 27. Mm-hmm. My whole life practically has been one constant, and that's when summer comes around, the cricket is on, and Australia win, particularly in the Test cricket. You could count the number of home Test cricket losses from the Australian team in my lifetime before the last couple of summers. You can almost count them on one hand. But that's certainly changed, and don't even get me started on touring, because Australia away from home has been almost embarrassing at this point.
Yeah, we do seem rather clueless away from home, and even when we play in similar conditions like in South Africa and New Zealand. So, things need to change.
Yeah. You're not wrong, and you said yourself you started playing sort of proper cricket at age 5. I was sort of similar boat back when I thought I was going to play for Australia. Very slow, very cumbersome, very defensive opening batsman. Got to the point where it sort of hit those late teens and I thought, maybe I'm not going to play for Australia. And I don't think I've played a block since then. I don't think I've played a defensive shot since then, to be honest with you. And it's probably not the best way to win cricket games. In fact, our record would speak for that very fact. But it's way more fun to swing at cricket balls and try and hit them over fences.
I'll certainly give you that. But I started out very probably the opposite to you, actually. I started out as a opening bat, very much modelled myself on Gibson, just tried to, you know, pull and cut everything for 4 and 6, which worked fine for about 4 or 5 years until I hit about under 16s, when the coaches are like, okay, mate, you've got to bat for longer than about 5 overs. Completely turned, did the opposite of like a David Warner and actually learned to do, well, the opposite of David Warner, or a bit like David Warner, and learned to defend and play long innings. And that's what I'm still doing now, playing district cricket in Canberra.
Nice, yeah, obviously yeah. You moved to Canberra. You grew up in Melbourne, yeah? Yeah, big change, obviously, for yourself. In stark contrast, I remember clearly, for a lot of my youth, my dad was the coach of my team. And I remember getting the signal out one day, either get some runs or get out. Because I think I was out there at the point where the game was like 32 overs. It was the 15th over and I was on 7 or 8 runs.
Yeah.
I can't quite remember which, but I had found a very, very nice groove for defensive strokes. And I wasn't gonna let that go. And I think I tried to play one expansive stroke, and I think my off stump ended up further back than any ball I hit that day. But I certainly moved on from there. I certainly did the reverse David Warner. I got to the point now where my only real shot is, as a left-hander, is plant that front right foot and really try and heave for cow corner. Although, as an undeniable tragic lover of Ricky Ponting in my youth, I do have a magnificent pull shot. I do say so myself, I love the old rock back and roll the wrists.
Certainly something that everyone loves watching.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. That's probably enough about us. Just sort of first podcast, as we said, is going to be pretty informal. We just wanted to get a little bit of chat down, let you guys know why we're doing it. For me, I think there's a bit of a dearth of quality cricket podcasts. I don't think it's an area that's been fully explored like a lot of other areas. So we're hoping to bring something a little different to the mix. This one podcast will go up on a couple of different mediums because iTunes takes like 2 weeks to check out new podcasts before they come out. So we'll place it up on SoundCloud and distribute it via Facebook and get the ball rolling that way. We may as well sort of get into a little bit of the proper stuff. We've obviously had had a squad and an 11 named for the Adelaide Test.
Yeah,
changes.
They've gone crazy.
What are your thoughts initially?
I don't think having so many changes to a side can ever be a good sign, unless you've got a whole raft of injuries or retirements. It does seem a bit of overkill, especially with Callum Ferguson and Joe Many just one test wonders. But certainly we've come around to that stage again of just trusting in the youth, and hopefully players like Nick Maddison will really get the chance and to stand up and make themselves counted.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. As you said, I suppose it was always going to be difficult to find the balance between changes had to be made, and I think we all can understand that there needed to be some significant change to the test squad after the last two tests, and the tour of Sri Lanka as well. Let's not forget the tests in Sri Lanka were embarrassing. And I mean, nothing against Sri Lanka. I've got actually a huge soft spot for Sri Lanka. Sanath Jayasuriya and Marvin Attapattu were two of my favourite batsmen growing up. And I actually had which is something very hard to get when you grow up in country Lithgow in New South Wales. Had a Sri Lankan World Cup cricket jersey, which I used to wear quite regularly at cricket training and used to wear it to games.
Was that from 96?
Love a bit of the Sri Lankans.
You sure? Oh, nice. Very nice.
Yeah, it was a 96 World Cup jersey. I got it. I had an MRF Genius sent out from India. My uncle was a pilot, and he flew to a lot of the subcontinental countries, and he picked up a whole MRF Genius and kit for me. and got him to stop in and get a he got a Sri Lankan jersey for me, because yep. this Jai Saria was just amazing. I could watch Sanat Jai Saria all day, and actually got to meet Marvin Attapattu and a lot of the Sri Lankan guys in Hobart a couple of years ago. We went down there to watch the tests. Had a great afternoon harassing poor old Tilan Semawira on the boundary rope. All in good fun. We spent a good hour just saying, "Tilan, give us a wave." And every time he waved, and then after about 40 minutes, we kept saying, "Oh, you know, your head's too big. Just watch, play the game, mate. Play the game. Don't worry about us. Play the game." And he just kept smiling and shrugging his shoulders. He had an absolute ball, and so did we. It was probably one of the best cricket trips I've ever been on. But the first guy you mentioned, Nick Maddison, he's probably been one of the younger guys that's been on the cusp of some more international cricket coming up. He's only 24, a young kid from Nowra, from memory, south coast of New South Wales. So we're all, well, not specifically the south coast, but New South Wales, where
sure, they hand out the baggy greens with the baggy blues, don't they? Hand in hand.
Yeah, they go hand in hand. You get one, you get the other. It's I always said when New South Wales cricket is strong, Australian cricket is strong. but I've never been at first class level in particular. He's played 59 first class matches now, 104 innings. Average is still less than 40, 37.6. Has he done enough to warrant test selection? In all
it
honesty,
it depends really the stage of cricket that we're at. Because like, if you remember, you know, back in the early 90s when we had guys like Langer, Hayden, Martin, Gilchrist, you know, coming in very much as kind of undercooked, underprepared kids, almost with the license to you know, dip their foot in the toe and say, okay, this is the level. Either you're good enough for it right away, or you find out what are the weaknesses in your game, and then you come back and come back stronger after one or two seasons. And I think that's what the selectors are trying to, you know, expose Nick Maddison and to some extent Matt Renshaw to. So I don't think they're in there with a lot of pressure on them, but certainly I think they're in there to kind of gauge what level they're at mentally, as well as, you know, the actual all-round knowledge of the game. But I think Hanscom's pretty much in there, you know, solidly, and, you know, expectation is going to be quite high, and the pressure to perform is going to be quite high on him, more so than the other two.
Yeah, I do agree. The thing for me, and I suppose you don't really know until you put someone
how they'll cope,
into
yeah.
the heat of it, but the guys you mentioned, your Haydens, your Langers, yeah, they came in, that struggled, went back, built their game. You talk particularly someone like Matthew Hayden and Justin Langer, probably two of the most mentally tough, most resilient cricketers I've ever seen. And I think we have seen people come onto the scene, struggle at first, and really fail to get back to that point. It almost like it came too quickly, I couldn't handle it, and it ruined me. And it, I mean, it can go either way. It's one of those things. And we are at a point where a couple of coin tosses are probably required. I would like to get your thoughts on the POM. Matt Renshaw, a POM wearing a baggy green.
Well, I suppose they've done it to us in to a certain extent, picking Pattinson and...
plenty of times.
Well, I think nowadays they've got more English players actually playing for England, but they did have a time when they were scouring the depths of Africa and Australia, New Zealand, for anyone who had a British-born grandparent to go play for them. I read in Crick Info just today about Alan Mulally. I didn't realise he was an Aussie, but he was on the cusp of playing Test cricket for us before they poached him across. So he was playing for Western Australia and was going to play in the 91 Ashes, and then in 89 or 90 the ECB said, pulled him across and said, well, we want you to play for us right now. So he moved across. But, I'm not too fussed about where players are born as long as they're, you know, been here for, you know, long enough to call Australia home and, you know, have citizenship and all that kind of stuff.
Of course, yeah. Now, I had a sneaky chat with my sister who, when I grew up, my sister hated cricket with a passion. And about 5 years ago, she turns to me and she goes, you know, I really like cricket all of a sudden. And she's almost as big a cricket tragic, like out of nowhere. I spent years trying to get her to watch cricket to absolutely no avail. But loves a bit of cricket now. And I sort of said to her, I said, well, look, I'll keep everything quiet. But if it's really embarrassing, if we get slaughtered in Adelaide, well, we can just blame a pop.
He's us. Yeah, he's one of
but,
us.
But if he does he's awesome. You know, that's
Andy Murray, Scottish, British.
Yeah.
It's, you know, one of us debate that they have over there.
Exactly. He's only ever British when he wins. So he's really British at the moment, being world number one. He's apparently super British. But in terms of sort of forgetting where he was born, in terms of experience, just the 12 first-class matches, obviously a decent run, you know, highest score of 170, averaging a tick under 45 across that level, at a decent clip, scored 300s.
Yep. You've got to pick them when they're in form. Yeah.
Started well. But 12 first-class, I'd love to... It's true. Yeah, it's. I suppose it's again one of those things where if you're good enough, you're old enough. But what a cauldron to sort of come into as an opening batsman too, and having someone like David Warner down the other end who could be there for 100 or could be caught edging to second slip, third ball of the innings. There's a lot of pressure on him. If we lose a wicket or two early and he's still at the other end,
We've got to think of David Warner and Khawaja and Steve Smith as properly senior batsmen. We seem to have skipped, you know, a half generation of 25 to 30 year olds in terms of the depth of batsmen. When we're going down to the 20 and the 21 year old batsmen, you know, as the future of the team, the rest of the side have to step up and, increase their reliability. So I don't think David Warner will be able to get away with too many more of those first and second ball dismissals, you know, when they're not, you know, really great balls. And same thing with Usman Khawaja. Like, you know, he can't do what he did in Hobart and bat really well for 90 minutes and then, you know, instead of restarting and going again, getting out cheaply, regardless of...
There's been a lot of knocks on someone like Usman Khawaja as almost a guy who's maybe not up for the fight so much. And I think that's his biggest test, is to be being able to show that when things aren't going well, he can put the head down and do a Faf du Plessis and bat
that's
all
been
that.
Lacking in Australian cricket for quite a while now. You know, since Ricky Ponting in 05, when he had to bat out pretty much a whole day to save a test match in England. I don't think we've ever seen any of the, you know, any of the batsmen really bat for a very, very long period of time. And, you know, we've seen Warner bat for one day and score a pretty big 100. I think that was in Hobart a couple of years ago. None of the batsmen batting, you know, a day, day and a half really comes to mind. Obviously, Chris Rogers had it, you know, had the capability, but never was in the position to do so for Australia. So,
yeah, I think you could probably throw someone like Simon Kadich in very similar. I think he almost relished the fight more than playing cricket. He loved having the back against the wall, and I'll be here all day and I'll fight you. But, it's obviously a tough thing to bat for 6 hours of test cricket is a phenomenal effort, but it just seems that, as you said, it's almost been so long, and we go from a time where if you lost an opener earlier, a Hayden or a Langer, for instance, you didn't panic because you had Ricky Ponting, you had Damian Martin, yep. you had Adam Gilchrist to come. You get you start to see if the current Australian side, or specifically the side of the last dozen Test matches or so, if we lose an early wicket, yeah. it's panic stations from the get go. It's very much, oh God, here we go again.
Because
and even someone like Steve Smith, who has shown on occasion that he can put his head down, this far too consistently silly dismissals.
And I think just the recent run of dismissals that we've seen just from Adam Voges seems to sum that up. Like, he's picked for his experience, picked for his self-awareness, knowing his own strengths, which we saw when he played against the West Indies, but come on, that was the West Indies. And ever since, we've just seen very soft, tame dismissals, almost as though, I've got better things to be doing, instead of scoring runs. And no one seems to value that time at the crease.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that even just a sort of a bit of recency bias, you look at the last Test match in Hobart, it was very much, okay, even with the lower middle order and the tailenders who, fair enough, there's been a collapse. You don't expect someone like a Joe Menny to stay around all day with Steve Smith or a Nathan Lyon or a Hazelwood or a Stark. But it was almost, well, we've lost it from here, so there's no point. We may as well get it over and done with.
Yeah,
it was almost as though
They'd almost given up. Because, that's certainly something that you wouldn't see from Peter Siddle last summer when he had to stick around for a while and make some runs and hang around. And it's, some of the dismissals that Stark and Hazelwood have, suffered this summer have just been horrible. If that was an under-12 batsman, even a tail ender, you'll be like, mate, we're playing cricket here. We're not giving out fielding practice.
Yeah, and it is a frustration. And it really bore through that first innings in Hobart in particular, when Steve Smith really was the only guy who looked like he wanted to be there at all. He looked disgusted at some of the dismissals. And, in the end, the second innings particularly, he got out as well. Like, I understand you will lose your wicket, but it almost got to the point where, as you said, it was just a procession of players coming through, and it was, okay, we're 5 for 30 now or whatever it is.
Yep.
We can't win this, so let's just get it over.
Yeah, I really think they could probably use a day watching Matty Hayden or Ricky Ponting when they battered for days, or even that innings of Mark Taylor, when he was over in Pakistan, when he batted for like almost 2 days. Yeah. Oh, God, that was an innings.
334. Yeah, well, I still remember from that, I remember my dad cut out the front page, or might have even been the back page. I'm sort of a little bit too young to remember, but it was from the paper, and it was just him sort of looking like he was shattered. It just said, Taylor bats and bats and bats and bats was the headline. And you don't see that. And I mean, I'm not saying, oh my God, we don't have a triple centurion every test. But you don't see people prepared to bunker down and play long,
and the thing is, like, the last
often enough. And whether that's T20 cricket, I don't know. But
that's a good point, because the last time we've had a real big double hundred was Michael Clarke against the Indians, and he never touched 2020 cricket, seriously. So I don't know, the thing that, the point that you're making, when the runs aren't coming easily, no one wants to bat for time. And I think that's, something that, right from the junior levels, I remember, saying that very sledge this last Saturday, the batsman's not doing anything, he's batting for time, when we were about two overs before drinks. And that's a very typical Aussie sledge, that he's not doing anything, he's playing and missing or leaving the ball. All these relatively useful techniques that you know, batsmen need, are very much frowned upon at the lower levels. And it's kind of, you know, beset the culture. So, you know, that's led to Nick Maddinsons and David Warners hitting the test side.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the most common sledges I can remember growing up is this guy doesn't want to be here. And that's fine at that level. I mean, Christ, sometimes talk about an existential crisis. Sometimes in 40-degree heat in Western Sydney, when an opposition is 2 for 350, I don't want to be there. But that's a damning... That's probably one of the biggest indictments on a professional cricketer, if you look like you don't want to be there at a professional level. But look, we've touched on this pretty consistently looking back, looking forward to Adelaide. Obviously, as we said, the big changes. Chad Sayers, the man to miss out, has been confirmed by Clarkey. Yeah, I thought the home test, I thought he'd probably get the nod over Jackson Bird, but it is the Tasmanian who gets the opportunity to come back into the test side. Obviously has a little bit of experience playing at this level previously. What are your thoughts? Would you have gone with...
I would have gone with Sayers. I probably would have, you know, if I was, you know, chief selector or, you know, whatever they want to call it nowadays, the guy who actually picks the 11, I would probably have gone and put Maxwell in the side as a bowling all-rounder. Dropped Nathan Lyon and played four quicks, because I don't really see Adelaide being that spin friendly, especially with the pink ball. I think Nathan Lyon could use a break, because we're going to need him against the Pakistanis, and we need him fresh. And Chad Sayers probably would have gotten us a few more wickets on his home ground, especially in that twilight period where batsmen of Australia and New Zealand last time said, you know, that twilight period with the pink ball was actually quite hard to see the ball, to follow the ball, and, you know, to bat consistently well. So, yeah, I would have, you know, mixed it up a little bit more, given that it's already 2-0, down, and probably instead of blooding Nick Maddinson, I would have played Maxwell. But yeah, that's just my 2 cents. What about yourself?
Yeah, look, it's, I certainly see where you're coming from. Myself, I get what you mean with Nathan Lyon. He looks tired. Nathan Lyon looks like he's just almost out on his feet. He's never been a strike weapon, but he's been great at holding up an end, creating pressure, and taking the occasional wicket. He doesn't look like taking a wicket at all. He very much doesn't look like taking a wicket. Myself, I would have, and it is a little bit controversial, he's had a brief stay on the test arena, but I would have picked Ashton Agar. I get what you mean, having the four quicks, and growing up on the way Australia play cricket, I have that inner desperation to have a medium pacer or fast medium all rounder. I love it. And not having that is obviously a move away. And we obviously continually tried to have that with someone like Mitch Marsh.
That's relatively recent in terms of our lifetime. Like, Australian cricket's only really tried to do that since Freddie Flintoff kind of won the Ashes for them in 05. And we copied them, but, you know, yeah, before that it was always, you know, four bowlers and what is that, six batsmen and a keeper. So
that's it. And we have always been blessed with batsmen who can roll the arm over. Your Michael Clarke,
Ponting, Hussey.
You can close your eyes and think of better say Mike Hussey rolling the armour. We've had keepers. We've
Darren
had
Lehman,
So I certainly get that. And I know, Boof rolling the arm over as well. But that absolute pursuit for that batting, bowling number six has probably come to a bit of a halt. I know they've picked young Hilton Cartwright in the ODI squad to take on New Zealand. And I think he could
potentially fit that role. I think Australian cricket's waiting for James Faulkner. Yep, two left-arm quicks.
The fork, you reckon?
Decent batsman. That would seriously strengthen the test site. But he's got to get fit and prove it, really.
Yeah, look, yeah, you're right. And I think he really needs to stake a claim on that longer form of the game because he's a mainstay. He's a fixture of the shorter forms, particularly with his late batting. Yep. He sort of assumed that Michael Bevan sort of role for a little period there where he was just calling him the closer and the finisher, you're right, and getting things done. So it'll be interesting to see, as you said, he comes back, gets fully fit and stakes a bit of a claim, that there may well be an opportunity for him, and one, particularly if one of the younger batsmen that's been brought in doesn't quite make it initially, which is by all means a possibility. In terms of the 12 they named, I pretty much expected the side to go with Sayers on his home turf. I thought it's almost the hot hand theory. I mean, massive NFL fan and NFL quarterbacks run on the hot hand theory. If you've got a hot quarterback, you keep getting him to throw it till his hand's cold. And Chad Sayers has been phenomenal this season. I'd love the selection of Peter Hanscom. But I'd love to get your thoughts on the selection of Matthew Wade and particularly his glove work. Is he purely on his glove work up to test standard, or is he just there because he can bat and he can throw the gloves?
He's vastly improved in the last 3 years since he last played a test match. I still think he's prone to probably one mistake a game, whereas he used to be prone to about two mistakes in innings. But yeah, he's probably not as reliable and consistent as Peter Neville, but given the, you know, the relative lack of experience in the side and around the squad generally, I think having him there with his experience of leading Victoria to a Sheffield Shield last year will also probably help Steve Smith in regards to maybe not having as many yes men around him, and also make sure that you know, when the going gets tough, you're not going to have someone who, you know, gets in a rut and doesn't know how to fight his way out of it, which I think Peter Neville.
You're right. Sorry, did you say Victoria won the Sheffield Shield last year?
Oh, yeah. That's.
I didn't know there was one.
Well, you just thought it just Shield didn't get cancelled after the semi-finals. We did actually play and we did win. So.
Yeah. What? Well. Yeah, I thought. Well, if New South Wales weren't going to be there, what was the point? But. Hopefully the guys from the Ed Cowan Appreciation Society, the Vic guys in there, Matty and that, will appreciate that one when they hear it, because there's a little bit of fierce
rivalry,
Victoria New South Wales rivalry going on there. So
yeah, I think like Peter Neville, like I think he's at that stage that I was talking about, in regards to, you know, the young batsman getting thrown in the deep end. I think he's got to go away and find a way of you know, flourishing at that top level. Because we know he can, you know, leave balls outside off stump, and that is not going to be a cheap, easy wicket, but he's, you know, not actually scoring runs.
That's the problem. I mean, I've just got his stats in front of me now. 17 test matches, 468 runs.
Now, that wouldn't have been bad
22.29.
If we didn't have the Adam Gilchrist era.
That's true. I mean, we expect a lot of keeper batsmen now. You really have to be
like, if
more
he was
than just
following
competent
up
both
from,
roles.
You know, Ian Healy, you know, we'll be perfectly happy. But we've had Gilchrist, we've had Brad Haddon win us games from, you know, four or five down. And that's pretty much where expectations are. And I don't think it's wrong to have that expectation because, you know, Neville's about the same age as us and he's grown up watching Gilchrist and Haddon. And, you know, he's followed in their footsteps. So, you know, pressure's on and he's got to show that he's up to that level as well with the bat.
Well, absolutely. Well, if you just compare Ian Healy, 119 tests, nearly 4,500 runs at an average of 27.3, to Adam Gilchrist, 96 test matches, 5,500 runs at an average of 47.6. As you said, it's, and then Brad Haddon beyond that, I haven't got Haddon stats in front of me, but Haddon very much continued that mould, and not so much scoring runs, but scoring runs quickly and aggressively. Tail order, and that served two purposes. They were both solid when we were under pressure, but if they came in at 4 or 5 for 200 or 300, they would pound teams into submission. It would just absolutely destroy any lingering hope teams had of,
and the batsmen,
okay, we get this guy and then we've got the tail.
Yeah, the batsmen, and then you'd have someone like, who can do that.
Go ahead.
Really determine how much of a workload the bowlers, you know, will get. Because, you know, if you can come in at five down for like 350 and make it, and when you leave it's, you know, declared at 500 or, you know, close to 600, you're probably not going to bat twice. Mm-hmm. So it really puts, you know, the onus on the opposition to occupy the crease. And then we've seen what that mindset does to a batting lineup just last week, watching England crumble against India. And so, you know, that kind of advantage is just amazing.
Oh, absolutely. And there's nothing more demoralising as a bowling team than getting that fifth wicket. Okay, one last recognised batsman, and then we're going to start seeing some tail enders come out. We might wrap these guys up in the next 45 minutes and we might get a quick stint with the bat. All of a sudden, flash forward 2 hours later and it's 5 for 500. Yep. It's demoralising. It's shattering. And as much as we all love cricket, standing out in the sun fielding for an entire day or 2 days can
very
be
quickly. And like,
pretty draining, you know, pretty quickly.
Just having one of those kind of sessions early on in a series sets the whole series up and potentially the whole summer. So, you know, that it's a very important role that Peter Neville really, I think he has the capability to live up to that standard. He just has to go away and score more runs and, you know, think about how he goes about it. And I think I fully back him to get back into the side pretty quickly.
Yeah, the big problem for Peter Neville now is he's 31. He's a bit older than you think. And if he has an extended stay out of the side, if Matthew Wade comes in and plays well, then there may just not be,
that's,
you know,
true.
Time might not be on his
side. Yeah, I suppose, yeah, Brad Haddon did play.
But, it's one of those things. I'm not saying 31 is old.
Yeah,
Christ,
I suppose, yeah, Brad Haddon did in.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of,
sorry, Matt, you want to go up? Go ahead.
No, you're right. No, I just said there's certainly a lot of cricket left in someone like Peter Neville, but you're 31, you go, you know, a year out of the test side, 2 years out of the test side, you have to go that little bit harder and go that little bit further at state level to get back, unless the guy who takes your spot struggles, of course. So it could all be a moot point if Matt Wade averages 25 over the next 3 years or whatever. But it's just one of those things. He's sneaky old, Pete Neville. He's just a little bit older than you
think.
Yeah,
I always thought he was about the same age as me. Although, you know, 3 years is not that much older. But
I brought up the stats, and I sort of did a double take and went 31. That's sort of surprised me as well, because you sort of just, you have this, it's almost like Michael Clarke. Yeah, I still think of Michael Clarke as young pup, and he's retired from the game. So I suppose you get that perception of someone. You just sort of think of them. They're always that young up and coming player, and then all of a sudden, their career's over. So I'm certainly not wishing that on Peter. He's one of the few Victorians who was smart enough to get all the way up to Sydney.
Well, I suppose we had it pretty sweet with Matty Wade. No opportunities for him. So you took our second string keeper.
Oh yeah, you don't
polished him up.
You don't have to tell us about keeping keepers, because we sent Adam Gilchrist packing, don't forget. So,
how well?
But all in all, obviously the next test starts tomorrow night. It's the day night test, the pink test in Adelaide. It's hard to predict test cricket over 5 days, but what are you looking for?
Fewer soft wickets when we bat. None of these taking the pace off the ball and guiding catches to gully, or short cover, or wherever else some of the tail enders especially have been hitting him. Someone at least one or two centuries, hopefully a really big century. I would really love it if Hanscom was to score like a big ton on debut, just flying the flag for the Vics there. But I think we'll do well to win, but I'm hopeful, not confident.
That's probably a good way of putting it. I'm probably in the same boat. I will always back Australia to win a test match. It's just in my nature. I will always back Australia to win a test match. And until it's over, I will have that belief. You know, it'll be 8 for 30 chasing 500. And you'll be like, okay, one good partnership, slow things down, and we'll be back on track. So I'll always go in hopeful and expecting a victory. It will be tough. I think we can categorically rule out a draw unless there's some unexpected bad weather. I think there's definitely going to be a result. I've got a sneaky suspicion.
It might not go four.
But I do think we'll get the win.
Yeah, well, ooh, I think Jackson
raising the stakes.
Have a bit of a blinder with the pink ball. Cut through them.
I like it. The big Sydney-born Tasmanian just ripping through South Africans left, right, centre. I like it. I hope you're right. I would love to see young Matty Renshaw do well. I don't anticipate coming out and scoring 250, although that would be fantastic. But if he can hang around, if he can grind some runs and show a bit of fight, that'll be fantastic for me.
Yep.
Just to see, okay, this is a young guy with his head screwed on, and he understands that whatever the other guy's doing at the other end, looking at you, Davey Warner, again, I'm here to play my innings. And whether that's 100 off 100 balls because they're 100 bad balls, which you're not going to get against South Africa, or 20 off 200 balls and be there at lunch, I don't care. I just want to see him put his head down and fight. So that'll be the big one for me, just looking for that fight. Not just from the new guys. I want to see how guys like Steve Smith react and David Warner react to the changes, and see how they integrate with such a young squad. So that'll probably be more telling than anything that happens across the actual result. It'll be keeping an eye on a lot of talk in the field, a lot of getting these guys into the groove, getting these guys ingrained into the squad. Yep. So that will be big for me. Now, just to sort of wrap up over scoreboard, there's not a lot of international cricket on at the moment. We do have the Women's One Day International, which is currently on North Sydney Oval, which is possibly the best place in the world to watch cricket.
Yet.
I don't know if you've ever watched a game at North Sydney Oval, but it is phenomenal. We caught the most recent, last year's Matador Cup, ODD final there, New South Wales and Brisbane, Queensland, when we slaughtered them. And being one of only about 50 people who bothered to turn up, we got on camera all day. Got quite sunburnt and quite boisterous. Watched Michael Slater nearly get hit by a car crossing the road. He ingested a couple of beverages at the pub across the road and just sort of walked across. And it was just like, oh, okay, he's not going to look, and nearly got hit by a car. But North Sydney Oval, beautiful ground. It's wrapped up. The women in the Southern Stars against South Africa, a 9-wicket victory. Had South Africa 8 for 173 after 32 overs and 1 for 174. So 9 wickets, 29 balls remaining. Very clean for the Southern Stars.
And moving forward,
we will talk on future podcasts a bit about women's cricket. Yeah, she's phenomenal. She's her and my future wife, my actual future wife isn't listening, so my other future wife, Elise Perry, who makes me feel funny in special places. She's playing well too. I have a little soft spot for Elise. So great win for the Southern Stars. We do have an ODI game in progress. There's a tri-series, Zimbabwe, Sri Lanka and the West Indies in Zimbabwe. Sri Lanka 330 for 7 after their 50 overs in Bulawayo. West Indies yet to bat. They were sent in Sri Lanka, so anytime you get that plus 300, you've got to be happy. But that'll be an interesting chase, because 300's not what it used to be. In
Is Chris Gayle playing for West Indies today?
Let me just have a quick look.
Yeah, because if he is, that might be chaseable. If he's not, I think they've pretty much won that.
They don't even want to put the squad up for me. Let me find it for you. While I do that, is there anything else you'd like to discuss before we call
it? That's about it. Looking forward to, obviously, the test match starting tomorrow, and then as well as the New Zealand-Pakistan series that's about to start the second test, I think, on Friday, with some very interesting Pakistani bowlers to look out for.
Yes.
But, yeah, that's going to be an interesting summer once this series is done.
Yeah.
Playing New Zealand in the Chapel Hadley Cup in the one days, and then Pakistan for the Boxing Day, and then Brisbane Boxing Day at Melbourne, and then the New Year's Test in Sydney. So it's the chop and change I don't really like, but yeah,
and
should be interesting.
As you said, I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I love the five test format, but obviously, when you get someone like South Africa out, they've got their own tradition with the Boxing Day test over there now. So you're not going to get them to come back out here for that. But they are a bit of a draw card, so it's always nice to see a team like South Africa actually out here. So I suppose Cricket Australia has sort of got to weigh that up. It'll never do as well commercially as an Ashes series or five tests against India, because that's what draws the crowds here. And I think Cricket Australia would play five test series against both of those two every summer from here until the end of time, because it would just fill the coffers.
What do you think of...
Same when we go over there, really. But just to answer your question, no.
That should make for Chris Gayle is not playing. What do you think of breaking up the test series with 3 1 days?
I'm not a fan, particularly given the struggles we're having with test cricket. It sort of seems like, okay, we're getting you into this test series. Particularly if we win this test match, it's almost like, okay, that's awesome. We've got something to build on. Let's put that on pause and go and play some one-day cricket, and then we'll come back to it. I like the traditional setup. You get the tests, you finish off with the one-dayers, and you get into late January, and you can get out to the SCG and watch a perler of a one-dayer in great weather. And it's a lot more fun, it's a lot more relaxed than test cricket. Not a fan personally, that's for sure. But from there, I suppose it's commercial scheduling is always going to play a huge part. Cricket Australia out to rake in a few dollars. And as you said, with that, with the series between Pakistan and New Zealand at the moment, it's a good chance to see what we've got coming. And always been it's a bit of a soft spot for playing against New Zealand as well, because it's always nice to just completely beat up little brother whenever possible. So it'd be great to do that again. But that's probably going to do us for tonight. We've gone a little bit longer than we're going to sort of aim to do normally. We're looking at about half an hour moving forward. But obviously, first podcast, we are at a point where we're going to talk a little bit more and we're going to flesh things out. So moving forward, we'll sort of segment things up quite nicely and have a bit more structure to the show. But Vish,
it's been
absolute pleasure to have the first show. And
it's been quite a blast. Anything you'd like to say before looking forward to roll on? A long future.
Excellent. In the meantime, do you have a Twitter handle?
If you want to follow me in regards to like my thoughts on sport, it's at United_journal. So you can find me there as well as on Facebook as well.
Excellent. Myself, best to catch me on Twitter. I'm on Twitter every day at Undiluted7. Saturday nights, 9 p.m. through to 11:30. British Football Watch on 2SSR 99.7 FM here in Sydney, or on the wide web, iTunes radio, whatever it is now. You can get us all there. Potentially looking at some Sunday morning breakfast show as well. So I'd love to see you there. And of course, the Straub Show and all the other podcasts that I talked about at the start. But this, hoping this is going to be one of the bigger ones. And we'll have a lot of fun putting this together and getting it out for you guys. And I'd love to hear your feedback. It'll be a little while before it's on iTunes. But any feedback, we've got the Facebook page, the Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Schnoop. And we'll hopefully go from strength to strength. So thank you very much for your company for the nearly an hour for this first show. We hope we've made your commute to work or your run on the treadmill or however you consume your podcasts a little less banal and boring. Yeah, mundane, that's the word I was looking for. I don't know, I went with alliteration instead with banal and boring. A little less mundane.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you next week. Okay, and stop.